You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, I'm Deeksha. So my question is, how did scientists come to know if a species is about to go extinct? Like, do they actually go and count the number of animals out there? Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, Deeksha, it's Flora from ELT.
Hey, Flora.
Are you more of an animal lover or a counting lover?
I'm more of an animal lover.
Did you have pets growing up?
So the thing is, my parents, they are scared of animals. So we never had pets. But when I got married, we did get fish and I had like lots of fish.
How many is lots?
So at one point, I think I had like 10, maybe 15. I love them. So
did you name each one?
Oh, yeah. I did. And I named them for all the Big Bang Theory cast. So I started with Sheldon and Leonard and Penny.
Were you able to count them? Did you know your population size?
Yeah, I was able to count all of them. I mean, after you've washed a fish for quite some time, you can identify which one is which.
So how did you start wondering about counting endangered animals?
So, I mean, I watch a lot of animal documentaries. When I'm cooking in the background, I like to just put something on the TV. And I was just watching a documentary about some kind of leopard. I mean, there are very few left in the wild. They're really endangered. And I wanted to know, like, how do they know how many are left? Did they try enough? Did they go back and look for more animals in the same region, maybe different region? Because a scientist who is out in the jungle looking for these animals, they would not be able to cover everything, right?
Right. Like, you can't cover every piece of ground.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the animals, of course, is going to move. So how do you know that you did not count the same member of the species twice? So, I mean, how do they know if a certain animal species is extinct?
I think we found just the person to answer your question.
Awesome.
I am a frog counter. It doesn't say that on my business card.
But it could.
It could.
This is Jamie Voiles.
Hello, Deeksha.
Hi, Jamie.
Jamie is a biologist who has tried to figure out your exact question. How do you know when an animal is extinct? And Jamie's focused on frogs. So, Deeksha, how do you feel about amphibians? Can you hop on board the frog ferry, the toad train?
So to be frank, I don't like them.
You don't like them?
No. No, they look so slimy. I don't know.
What is it about them that you don't like?
So back in India, where I was born and brought up, the house that we lived in, that was almost like in the woods. So there was like lots of frogs and they would just come in our home all the time. And there were many. And they just hop all over. God, it just brings back horrible memories. Especially there was one, he was sitting in the toilet bowl. God, it was huge. Probably like 6-7 inches.
It's like the size of a small dog.
Yeah, almost like that. That was, And it just jumped. Yeah, I don't like them. And they have that, the weird sound.
The ribbit?
Yeah, I don't like that. The ribbit word sounds good, but when a frog says it, it's not funny. It's not good.
Well, let's see how you feel about them by the end of the show.
Okay.
So our expert Jamie caught frog fever in 2003. She was in graduate school and signed up for a research trip to Panama, which was basically frog and toadtopia at the time.
You would be surrounded by little froglets. And in some places, you could barely walk without risk of stepping on one because they were just everywhere. If you sat down to take measurements of frogs, they would hop on your notebook or, you know, they'd be on your shoe or they just were everywhere.
Like a carpet of frogs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ew. It's bringing bad memories. No. Why would somebody go there?
So Jamie had the exact opposite reaction.
I absolutely was besotted with the toads that I was working with. They're just so incredibly charming.
Oh my God.
Do you think it's the big eyes?
Partly. It's also their round features and frequently their funny faces, which, you know, they look like they're frowning and they can be regal or goofy. And I just couldn't get enough of them.
You know, now that she mentioned it, I do like their eyes, the popping eyes.
But I take it you would not describe them as incredibly charming.
No. No, not charming.
So for Jamie, it was frog nirvana on that trip. But after she came back, in the years following, she started hearing troubling reports from Panama.
The people who lived in those areas noticed the loss of the sound of the frogs calling at night, or noticed that they weren't finding frogs as they usually did around their properties. It wasn't clear why it might be, but it definitely seemed like the numbers were off.
It turned out the numbers were off because of a killer fungus.
Batrachochytrium dendrobatidis.
Or BD for short.
It's one of the most severe infectious diseases that we have ever known in wildlife.
That doesn't sound good.
No. And that fungus was spreading through Central America, including Panama, killing off huge numbers of frogs and other amphibians. Which meant Jamie had to come to terms with the idea that these animals that she had fallen in love with might all be croaking.
That's really hard to wrap your brain around, especially for frogs, which have been around for forever, like through multiple ice ages. And they're some of the organisms that have been on the planet longer than anything else. And so this idea that in this small little point in time, they completely disappeared, that just seemed like a loss that we can't even get our heads around.
Oh my God, just sad.
I know.
I know I don't like frogs, but I don't want them to suffer.
Jamie had a hard time accepting it, that these species of frogs that were hopping all over the place in 2003 had been entirely wiped out.
We knew that the situation was grim, and there were not many frogs left in these areas where we had worked. But we wondered if there was anybody who was out there doing the work to document if they were there or not.
Just like you were saying, Deeksha, it's hard to prove extinction.
Yeah, that's exactly my question. Like, how do they know how many are left?
Yeah, it takes a certain amount of meticulous, systematic surveys to be able to say with some degree of certainty that it's completely gone or not.
Basically, it takes a lot of looking. And for the frogs, Jamie wasn't sure every toadstool had been turned over, every lily pad looked under. So she went back to Panama. And this time, she went searching for one species in particular.
The scientific name is Atalopus varius.
Commonly, it goes by the variable harlequin frog.
They're beautiful, elegant frogs. They sit and have a very majestic stature.
I'm going to send you a picture. I hope it won't provoke chills and nausea. And we'll put it on Spotify and Instagram at ELT Show.
Okay. Oh, God. It looks like a small carrot, like a baby carrot with a lot of spots on it. Really bright orange and big eyes.
The frog is only 1.5 inches long. Does that help?
No. If it was in my home, I wouldn't be able to see it.
These are individuals that can fit in the palm of your hand. And this particular species of frog has bright yellow colors with black patterns. And so frequently they're just sitting on a mossy boulder by the side of the stream, and they're just delightful when you find them and hold them in your hand. And it was hard to reconcile this idea that I might have been the last human that was able to take a picture of that frog or document one, and that just really haunted me.
Had this fungus wiped out the variable harlequin frog? Jamie went back to Panama to see if they were really gone.
It was like, this is chasing ghosts.
That's after the break. Nearly a decade after Jamie first laid eyes on a variable harlequin frog, she and a team returned to Panama to try to find them. They went back to field sites where they'd counted these frogs in the past, and these sites are not easy to get to.
That means putting together a backpacking expedition with horses to help us carry the gear. And then it might take us, you know, between 3 to 5 hours to hike up into the streams where we're working.
The team revisited streams they had already marked, mapped, and measured in previous counting trips and surveyed the exact same sections down to the meter.
Okay.
Picture Jamie sloshing around stream beds in muddy rubber boots.
We're frequently working in the mist or falling in the streams. The boulders in the stream are very slippery. So there's, shall we say, multiple opportunities for very extensive bruising on your backside. And it's a tremendous amount of work, to say nothing of all of the bug bites.
That doesn't sound good at all.
I know. And to add insult to backside bruises, the frog search wasn't going well. Jamie found those places where frogs had once jumped all over her notebooks and carpeted the ground, they were completely different now.
The first thing that you notice is how quiet it is. Prior to the disease emerging, you could just hear a huge range of frog calls. So that was the biggest thing that I noticed, is the frog calls, which are sometimes deafening, they were gone. We had data sheets that had many, many lines, and they were empty. Like, they literally said, no frogs. And you compare that to your field notebooks from a decade earlier, where I was taking notes from the time the sun set until 4 in the morning.
Were you ever like, what am I doing out here?
Absolutely, yeah. It was like, this is chasing ghosts. Why are we doing this? And my husband as well. My husband was like, I don't understand why you would do this and come back so battered. There's very little reward right now. So why are you doing this?
Just sad. It's a lot of hard work. I had no idea.
It is a lot of work. And that's what it takes to find out if an animal is really gone. Jamie and her team meticulously, systematically searched the streams for almost 4 months.
Oh my God.
So they were getting to the end of the trip and the team was running out of hope.
I remember that it had been raining really hard. So my tent felt incredibly soggy and humid and uncomfortable. And I was quite cranky. And we were doing our normal thing, which involves walking the stream sides, doing searches for frogs.
When one of Jamie's grad students spotted a flash of gold on a boulder.
Oh my God.
He said, you know, I think I found one. And to be honest, I was skeptical. I mean, you can imagine, like, we've been searching every day for months. And I kind of thought, like, no, you didn't. You know, I said, okay, let's go check it out. And sure enough, there he was. And I kind of looked at him wide-eyed and I said, like, wow, you're right. This is what we've been looking for. There were other members of the field team who came along and said, uh-huh, yep, this is it. This is the frog.
That's amazing. For a second, if I assume that I am Jamie, and in her shoes, you know, after so much hard work, you see this one tiny frog, you wouldn't know how to express that emotion.
Yeah, I think it took a few minutes to sink in. And then once it had sunk in, it was definitely like a jubilant moment of so much pure excitement.
So the team celebrated. They took a lot of photos, measured every single thing they could, and put the frog prints back on its rock.
So after 4 months, they found one frog. Was that guy the literal last one, or were there more?
Here's what Jamie said.
So if there's one individual, there's got to be more out there.
But how many more? Jamie says she can't give an exact number. It'd be impossible to search every square inch of the frog's territory. So instead, researchers go back to the exact same spots year after year, tally up what they see, and use that data to determine trends.
Think about it as snapshots through time in the exact same location. So like we had this number of amphibians in this location in 2012, in 2013, in 2014, 2015, and so on.
And from those snapshots, you can get a sense for how the population has changed over time. So that's the deal with estimating frog populations. But for other animals, it's easier to get an exact count.
So if you think about something like fish in a pond, you can basically stun the fish for a short amount of time and then count every single individual. And something like a tiger, it's relatively easy to radio track them or put collars on and have a sense of exactly how many individuals are within a certain geographic space.
So what happened in this case? Did this frog bring back the species, or like were there more?
So what we do know about the variable harlequin frog is that they do seem to be making a teeny tiny comeback. So before 2004, researchers found these frogs in 75% of their surveys. A few years later, they didn't find a single one. Then after 2012, they were found in 20% of surveys.
Did they adapt to the disease, like the survival of the fittest? Did they somehow, evolve with it?
Yeah, so there's debate about what's going on. And I don't want to paint a rosy picture because there are many species of amphibians that are thought to have gone extinct because of the fungus. But Jamie's research suggests that some frogs might be developing defenses against it.
That's good.
How are you feeling about frogs now?
You know, you won't believe it, but since I kept this picture open on my desktop while talking to you, and I've started to like the small fellow.
It's a cute baby carrot.
It's a cute baby carrot, yes.
They're fine in streams in Panama.
Yeah, they're good there. If it was in my home, I'd probably be like running around everywhere and maybe standing on my kitchen counter, for instance. But I can appreciate the beauty.
If you have a burning question you can't find the answer to, you have Googled. You've asked your coworkers in every Zoom call. You've Wikipedia'd the crap out of it. And you still have no answer. Please call us. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Hager Eldass, Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, Billy Libby, So Wiley, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. ELT is a Spotify original podcast. Ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. Goodbye.